Brian, hello and welcome to the podcast.
Oh, and I'm delighted to be on. I'm looking forward since the rebrand and a few things we've been talking about with your business and putting out your message out there. I'm absolutely delighted to be on. So thanks so much for having me.
Absolutely, man. And it's a beautiful rainy day at last. Sunshine seems to have gone, so I guess it's a good day to be inside recording, right?
It is. We were chatting this morning and I had a couple of cancellations on a few appointments I had. So I was like, you were like, we need to get the podcast sorted up. So today was a perfect time for it. I'm like, I'm looking out at the rain on the mountains. I'm like, let's just have a chat with cool people. Like, that will be way better than standing outside in the rain for the day. So looking forward to it.
Absolutely brilliant. Well, thanks for being here, Brian. And yeah, as we were discussing recently, I have recently rebranded the podcast to the Muscle Up Training Podcast. And the theme of the Muscle Up Training Podcast, it's going to go in the same kind of direction as the previous podcast, which was the Dobcast. And it's more so going to be orientated towards people who are chasing body composition goals, generally young adults. And of course, with any goal, there is an awful lot of different aspects to attaining that goal and achieving it. And particularly for body composition, I want to talk to you today about the mindset aspect, more so than the physical aspect, because a lot of people, I think, know what they have to do physically and with their diet, but the mindset is where they fall down. So in your thoughts, how important is the mindset for adherence when you are chasing body composition goals or any other goals for that matter?
Yeah, I think mindset is such a massive part of it because one of the, and I kind of fell into this avenue. So for anyone unfamiliar with my background, I'm a personal trainer, sports nutritionist, strength and conditioning coach. I did the kind of traditional route into fitness. And what I found when I was working with people, all my business is online now. So all my online programs and everything I do is in an online capacity. But when I was working one-to-one as a personal trainer in a gym, I found that a lot of the people I was working with were had a good idea and a decent idea on what it is they needed to do. So they knew that lifting weights was probably going to be helpful for body composition. They knew that cardio was good for burning body fat or helping them burn more calories, but they didn't know whether they should do low intensity or high intensity. But they had a general idea on good principles. They knew what food was good. You know, they knew the difference between a calorie and a cupcake, that your certain foods were better for your body, for fueling you for energy levels, and certain foods weren't as good. But even with that knowledge, a lot of people kept falling down. And I kind of fell into the mindset space because I started to address these problems with my clients. So when I was working one-to-one as a personal trainer, I started to kind of dive into the question a lot more on why isn't people or why aren't people able to adhere to their nutrition or to their training? And when we got to the root of it was down to the mindset side of things, trying to identify why were people falling off track? What was happening that they couldn't be consistent with the training program for 3, 4, or 5 days of the week? Or more so with the diet and nutrition side, where they might eat really well for 3 or 4 days and then they'll go off and they'll completely fall off the wagon at the weekend, or they'll have a few too many drinks and then they'll say, you know, completely, I'm not sticking to my diet anymore. And then they're back on it again Monday. And this cycle was repeating. And when I was able to figure out what was going on with people, I understood it was the mindset side of things, a combination of not having what I call a strong enough why. So not having an end goal in mind that was bigger or better or more emotionally driven than I want to lose weight. Like, I want to lose weight isn't a great goal. You know, it's not a very specific goal. I want to lose 20 pounds is a bit more specific, but it's still not a great goal. I want to build confidence, or I want to look better without clothes on, or I want to feel sexy in this dress or this clothing or this t-shirt that I bought, whatever, you know, depending on gender, male or female. The language that people were using and the emotional attachment that they had wasn't strong enough. So it was too easy to fall off track with their diet. Same as if you're trying to build muscle, you know, Muscle Up Training Podcast, like trying to build up a muscle, it was the same thing. Not having their mindset right that muscle takes time. Like, there's a combination of the educational element of muscle building, which is realizing that it's a patience game for the most part. Unless you're an absolute genetic freak, you're not going to build muscle in 2 weeks or 3 weeks or 4 weeks. Like, you're just not. But you can drop a lot of weight in 3, 4, 5 weeks, 6 weeks. You can drop a lot of body fat in that period of time. Muscle building is a completely different process. And that's a mindset angle, because setting the expectation on the front end has nothing to do with lifting weights in the gym. Setting expectations on the front set, front of any goal that you set for yourself is all about getting your mindset right, that, right, I want to build muscle. I want to do this over a 3, 4, 5, 6 month period. I need to have a structured plan that's around that. If I fall off track or get sick or get injured, I just kind of pivot and go in another direction. And that all comes down to the mindset side of things. So not self-sabotaging because you fell off track at the weekend, you know, getting your mindset right so that you train on the days you have to train, whether you feel like it or not. One of my mentors used to say, and you know this, Owen, from, you know, from as long as we've known each other, that successful people do what they have to do, whether they feel like it or not. And as a result of that, when you're able to condition yourself to do those workouts, eat those meals, regardless of how you feel, you're going to set yourself up for long-term success. And that's all mindset. That has nothing to do with the meals you prep in the kitchen or nothing to do with the weights you lift in the gym. That's all about getting your mindset right on the front end.
Amazing. Yeah, brilliant take on it, Brian. And I want to ask you about something that you mentioned there with regard to people having maybe underlying emotional issues that are affecting their mindset. And if they do have an underlying emotional issue, is there steps that they can take to perhaps use that to their advantage? So someone who's struggling to change their mindset, can they use the thing that's been holding them down as a kind of an entry level to, I suppose, mindset change for a specific goal, or maybe just for their mindset around life in general?
So just to preface this, when I speak about anything to do with mindset or what I'm going to expand on now in terms of basing your personality type on whether you should use your driver or emotional trigger to drive you, or whether you should try and handle that because it's actually going to set you up on a destructive path, just to kind of preface that, I'm not a psychologist, psychiatrist or anything along those lines. Everything I use is from personal experience with people that I've worked with, and from fortunately being able to travel the world now speaking on the topic, having written best-selling books on the topic of mindset and rewiring your mindset, etc. So just to preface with that, but when it comes to emotional triggers, like you mentioned, the experience that I've had with people is depending on what's driving it is going to be important. So an emotional trigger, it's kind of like fire. You know, the analogy I would use on my podcast is that an emotional trigger like that is like fire. Fire is brilliant and can light up your whole house and keep you warm, but it can also burn the whole thing down. So you have to be very mindful of those emotional triggers, because one personality type and one person will use the negativity, whatever that is, whether that was an upbringing, whether that was words from a family member or a friend, and they'll use that, and that will be their driving force every day. They'll be like, I'm going to prove that fucker wrong. I'm going to do it. I'm going to do what I need to do. Whereas somebody else, it'll completely destroy them. It will just cripple them, because all they'll be able to think about are the words that that person threw at them. And as a result of that, it means they're, you know, going to get analysis by paralysis. They'll overthink the entire situation in a lot of cases, and then don't end up doing anything. So I would identify first, always with somebody, is what's the emotional trigger, and then decide on their personality type. If you're somebody that does better with that, so for example, I've always done really well with it. Like, I've always done well with people telling me I can't do something or people criticizing me, because it gives me a motivation to get up and do it. You know, I'll never forget the time when I quit my teaching job. So for background, for anyone unfamiliar, I used to be a teacher. So I was a primary school teacher for 4 years, and then I left that and went in to set up my own personal training business. And I'll never forget one of my family members, literally over a Christmas dinner or a Christmas meeting, a gathering of about 30 people from her family, was like, you fucking idiot, after like too many Chardonnays. They were like, why did you quit your teaching job? Because I left that Christmas. And they're like, why did you quit a safe, secure job? You're an absolute fool. You're so stupid. And I remember, like, it was really embarrassing at the time, because I was only like 20, just gone 26. And it was in front of like 29, 30 other family members. And I was just like, oh, fuck. But I remember those words when I needed to get up at 5 a.m. to train a client at 6. I remembered that for the next 12 months, the next 18 months. And I remembered that on mornings when I was really struggling to get out of bed because I needed to take a class or I needed to take someone in PT. I'm like, prove that person wrong. I'm like, use that as motivation and use that as fire and use that as fuel. So I was able to do that. And, you know, I spoke about it in my first book, The Fitness Mindset, that, you know, people change their opinions. I remember that person came up to me when the book hit the bestseller list of my first book, and they were like, I knew you were going to make it. And that was the only time ever, because I'm quite a chilled out guy for the most part, it's the only time ever I called somebody out on it. I was like, no, you fucking didn't. I was like, you didn't. I was like, because I literally used your words for mornings when I couldn't get up. And in hindsight, I'm super thankful for that, because I was able to use that as a motivating driver, and it was really helpful. But the same person, as someone of another personality type, that would stop them. And one of the things I addressed in my last book, Rewire Your Mindset, was depending on who you are, one of those scenarios is going to connect with you. If you're going to be similar to me, it's going to be the best thing ever. It's literally like someone's giving you a shotgun and loading up with bullets. I'm like, it gives you ammunition to get up the mornings you have to get up and do the things you have to do, whether you feel like it or not. But for somebody else, it's taking the gun and putting it to their head. It does the opposite. So you need to be able to identify what works best for you, because if you fall on the other end of the spectrum where the emotional drivers are, the emotional triggers aren't allowing you to get into great shape or go after that job you want or do whatever it is, whatever's holding you back, because it's, you know, fitness is just a metaphor for how we do anything. You know, like I was on a podcast recently with the Sculpted Vegan, the Sculpted and Strong podcast, and Kim, who's the host on there, was like, how you do the dishes is how you do everything. And I'm like, I love that analogy, because it's true. Fitness, how you do your fitness is how you'll do everything. So if somebody is setting a goal and they're worried about what everybody's thinking, a lot of the things that I address in my books and on my podcast, I'm like, you have to get to the root of that. You have to get to the core of that and why that is. Because if it's not helping you and it's not driving you, it's effectively going to stop you. So if you fall into that bracket, be aware that you need to fix your mindset. You know, you've seen this, Owen. Like one of the things, one of the, just to give context to people listening, one of the ways I've known Owen now for, it's definitely over a year now, I'd say, Owen. We're 18 months maybe?
Probably around that time. I've definitely been, I've known you for longer than you've known me.
But, yeah.
We've been working together for a while.
Yeah, exactly. Because obviously meeting at seminars and then the online business course and then in the group. But you saw even when I was chatting to a few people in our group, we have the online business group, that some people have issues with afraid of putting out content. And this is the same thing as fitness. People that are afraid to get in shape, etc. That's a mindset issue. I'm like, that has nothing to do with business, and that has nothing to do with strategy, and that has nothing to do with tactics. And nutrition and diet and training is the same. I'm like, if somebody, you can give them the best tactics in the world, you can put them into a calorie deficit, or you can put them into a calorie surplus and address their protein intake so that they're able to build muscle, they're able to change their composition to the way they want. But if their mindset's all fucked up, none of that matters, because you can give them the best plan in the world, but they're just going to self-sabotage anyway and get in their own way because their mindset isn't addressed. So whatever, just to pull it back to your original question about the emotional trigger, figure out where you fall on that spectrum. Because if you're able to use it, think of it like the fire analogy. If you're able to use it as fuel for the fire, it's going to be very beneficial for you moving forward. But also keep that in mind that it could be a loaded gun, or it could be burning down your whole house if you don't get it under control. And in that case, it's about diving into, why do you care so much about everyone's opinion? Who is it that you're truly trying to impress? Or why don't you have legs on your confidence table? Or what's going on there? You know, confidence, if it's a lack of confidence, then, you know, that comes from competence. You know, competence comes from, if, when you have confidence in something, you get more confident. And to get confidence, you need experience. So it's putting yourself out there and just going from that 0 to 1 and getting that first step. So it's a different path based on where you're being held back. But you need to have a little bit of self-awareness on what drives you as a person. Because if you get crippled by the emotional trigger or the thing that's holding you back and what would be potentially a motivating factor for somebody else, that's going to stop you hitting whatever end goal you're trying to do. Like one of the stories I use in the book and I've used on the podcast is, I remember when I was working 1-to-1 as a personal trainer, I was used to be in the Galway City gym in Galway City, and I'll never forget one of my girls who came in to me, and she came in and she was like, I need to lose 30 pounds. And she had, to be fair, she had about 30 pounds to lose. She was quite overweight. And I was like, right, we had this conversation. I was like, why do you want to lose 30 pounds? And she goes, well, I've got my sister's wedding in 6 weeks. So first I had to align the whole expectations that we're not losing 30 pounds in 6 weeks. Or if we are, you're not keeping that off, you know, unless we chop off a leg or chop off an arm or something like that. You're not going to lose that weight and keep it off long term. So I was aligning the expectations, but I asked her why. I was like, why do you want to, you know, drop 30 pounds for your sister's wedding? And she was like, well, I, you know, there's a dress I want to fit into for it. And I was like, all right, cool. I was like, why do you want to fit into the dress for your sister's wedding? She was like, because I feel really sexy and confident in it. I'm like, all right, cool. Why do you want to feel really sexy and confident in the dress at your sister's wedding? She was like, oh, because there's a guy going there that I fancy. I'm like, all right, cool. I'm like, that's better than for a short-term goal that we can work towards. We're working towards the wedding that's coming up in 6 weeks' time, but it's not going to be, you know, we're focusing on the 30 pounds. We're focusing on, you're here because you want to feel more confident. You're here because you want to feel sexier. You're here because there's somebody you fancy that you want to talk to and you want to feel sexy and confident in front of them. that. So even if I never brought it up again or never used it again as a potential carrot in a training session, she knew why she was with me. So it went, the goal went from I need to lose 30 pounds, which is better than I need to lose weight, at least it's a little bit more specific, to this is why I'm here. And it makes it easier for that person to stick to their diet and why they're doing it. You know, whether you're trying to build muscle, whether you're trying to lose body fat, whether you're trying to do this, that, or the other, if you're not clear on the emotional reason why you're doing it, it's not normally going to be enough, because there's going to be days when you don't want to train. There's going to be days when you don't want to eat a certain way. That happens to everybody. But having an underlying why and a stronger emotional trigger and motivating factor on the front end and setting yourself up with that allows you to do it on the days when you don't feel like it. And ultimately, that's what tends to determine success for most people.
Amazing. Yeah, I think I fall in the same headspace as yourself, in that using I suppose negative words or things from other people as fuel for my fire to keep me going, and a kind of attitude of, oh, I'll show them, and wait till you see the look in their faces when I show them, kind of using it that way. But I think, yeah, it definitely has to be thought about that some people may not respond as well to that, so it's going to be very individualized. The next thing that I want to ask you your thoughts on and your opinions, and I know you're a big man for goal setting, like most successful people are, but I have a couple of questions in relation to goals. So the first one, and I know it's important to have goals, and it's, I suppose this is kind of a question that I almost know the answer to, but how important it is to have goals. And the second question is one that's a little bit more, I suppose, out of the ordinary. I know you're a big fan of Gary Vee, and I follow him a lot. I listen to a lot of his content, his podcasts, and I've noticed quite a few times recently he has talked about not putting a time limit on goals, because when you hit that time limit and you haven't achieved the goal, it's a letdown. However, I also listen to a lot of content from other people whose approach is to have a time limit on a goal to, I suppose, make you more productive between the start of the journey towards that goal and actually getting there, to, I suppose, give you a kick up the ass, for want of a better word, to get you there. What's your thoughts on goals and timeframes on goals?
That's a great question. In terms of goals, I'm a big believer, as you said, just to go with the original question. I think, you know, random training and random eating equals random results. I think if you don't have a goal or a plan that you're working towards, like, you're just going to end up going nowhere. And I think that goes for everything. I've got certain strategies. Like, I'm literally recording this podcast, Owen, with 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 whiteboards in front of me. You know, I've got all my goals for the week are on there, the month, the 6 months, the year, and the 10-year. I've got a 10-year goal list, which is just like a very vague thing that just keeps me a little bit accountable to where I want to go in terms of my time, what I want to be doing, you know, what, how I want to give back, etc. So I think regardless of the goal, whether it's business related, whether it's fitness related, whether it's relationship related, whatever it is, I think you have to set the goal. And one of the things I spoke about in Rewire Your Mindset is the reticular activation system. So this is the cognitive neuroscience, which isn't dissimilar to the law of attraction. You know, a lot of people are familiar with The Secret, the law of attraction, etc., that the universe conspires to give you everything you want. But the scientific standpoint, which is kind of where I tend to fall, I struggle with faith-based approaches. I tend to prefer evidence-based approaches on things, just because it's the way my brain works. It's a lot more logical that way. And the reticular activation system is your brain's internal GPS. It's the section of your brain that tells you what to focus on. So effectively, the example I use in the book, you might appreciate this as someone that's been, you know, into sport and lifting, etc. But I remember when I was 16, I didn't have a lot of money. Like, this, we're just thankfully, again, never wanted for anything, but we didn't have a lot of money, me or my sister, when we were growing up. And so we both worked part-time jobs for all through school, evenings after school, and during summers and at weekends. And I remember I was saving up for about 5 weekends for Adidas Predator boots. So it's like, they're starting to make a comeback now. I saw them recently, the ones with the tongue that flip over, like they're kind of the retro boots. But I remember at the time, I was saving up. They were about 100, and I think they were 150 euro, which is like, it was like 4 or 5 weekends of work for me. So I saved up, bought these boots, and it was the first time I'd experienced that reticular activation system, because I was so focused on working to buy these boots, because I'm like, I want these, they're going to be amazing. I was big into my GA, that was my life, that's what I did, and I did nothing else but play. And then I remember when I walked onto my first game wearing those boots, there was like 7 other players on the field with those boots. And I'm like, when the fuck did everybody get Adidas Predator boots? And I remember thinking, I didn't know at the time, but it's on reflection looking back, I'm like, those boots were probably always there, but I didn't notice them because they weren't in my reticular activation system. They weren't in my forefront of my mind. And the analogy I use, and you might have heard this from the seminar, that is if you walk into a room of 100 people and one other person is wearing the same t-shirt as you, you straight away notice, oh, I have that t-shirt. And I'm like, there was 99 other t-shirts there, or 99 other pairs of shoes there, or 99 other handbags there, and you notice the one that you have. That's your reticular activation system. You know, and you know this from the seminar, that when you can hack that by setting a goal and putting it somewhere where you can see it, you're automatically tuning your reticular activation system to see it and see the things that you may not have seen beforehand because they were always there. You know, it's the same as the person that, if you remember, and some people listening will be similar, when you first decided you were going to get in shape, you start to see gyms everywhere, or you start to see personal trainers everywhere, or you start to see classes everywhere, but they were always there. You just didn't notice them because they weren't in the forefront of your mind. So once it becomes a goal, like we're evolutionary evolved species to seek food and water and things that keep us alive, but you can hack that primitive system to hit whatever goal you want. So write it down somewhere you can see it, and then you'll start to see, you know, the law of attraction, where it is the universe conspiring to give you all the things that you want, but at least now you're not missing it. So that's why I push, regardless of how big my goals are. Like when I ran through the Arctic, when I ran 6 back-to-back marathons in the Sahara, when I won my pro card for fitness modeling, when I did my first bodybuilding show, all of those goals, I just put, even though they seemed to me unrealistic at the time, I just put them on a whiteboard, or I put them on a post-it note, you know, normally in my bedroom at the time. Now I have an office, but in my bedroom at the time, so that I could see them. So I'd wake up in the morning and I'd see my goal, and when I'd go to bed at night, I'd see my goal, and it started to become more real to me, and I started to focus on different things that would help me hit it, regardless of how unrealistic it seemed. I remember when I first stepped on stage in a bodybuilding show, I was like, that was something that I always thought just other people did. I would, you know, look at the likes of Schwarzenegger and other people, Ronnie Coleman, and I'm like, bodybuilding, regardless of the level, I'm like, that's something other people do. But once I set the goal and put it somewhere, everything started to feel like it was conspiring to give me that. You know, my nutrition changed. I started seeking out different people that I could work with potentially. I started looking at different training protocols that would help me get in shape. I started looking at different plans that would help me get ready for a show. And everybody has a version of that. Running a marathon, building muscle, getting a new job, earning a certain income, whatever it is. Putting it somewhere allows you to focus on it. So that's the first part of the question. When it comes to the second part, Gary V, the thing with Gary V, I'm a huge Gary V fan, but I actually don't connect with any of his motivational stuff. I love Gary V's approach, and like one of the things I tell people is, you know, horses for courses is what my mum used to always tell me. That I love Gary V when he's talking social media. So if he puts up a podcast or a video on the DM algorithm, or how the DM algorithm or the newsfeed algorithm has changed on Instagram, or how certain virality videos will pop on TikTok, I am all over that. I absolutely love his social media content, but I don't connect with any of his motivational stuff. Like, it doesn't speak to me. None of it speaks to me because I have a different philosophy. I have a different outlook, and I don't connect with him on that. I love him, and I've sent, you know, you and countless other people, I'm like, go follow him, you know, and particularly younger people, because, you know, you fall in that bracket on, even though you're super driven. The younger people who either need the drive or need the patience, I'm like, go check out Gary V's content because his mindset stuff's really good. But my philosophy is slightly different. Like, I do like the macro patience, micro speed approach. Like, he has a philosophy that I think is very helpful depending on where you're at in your life. And his philosophy is that if you're, you know, planning to live for the next 70 years, what's your rush in doing the thing you're doing? And I'm okay with that if you're very type A. So my default composition is very type A. Like, I'm very go, 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 hit the goal, next goal, hit the goal, next goal. Like, one of the analogies I've used, and I stole this from Felix Dennis, who's a former billionaire, he's dead now, but his books are amazing, How to Be Rich, and he's written some amazing books, terrible titles, but they're like the best books about, they're really practical books on investing and business and life in general, just with a terrible fucking title. But he talks about the tiger of ambition. That ambition's like a tiger, that if you don't get in control of it, you don't want a fucking tiger running loose. And that's how I feel in my life. I don't struggle with ambition. I don't struggle with drive. I don't struggle with any of those things. I struggle to control those things. I struggle to figure out how to calm my mind. I struggle to not be in that conscious conscious, constant state of anxiety because you're always trying to work to the next thing and improve yourself. So different people, similar to what I said earlier about the motivation and emotional triggers, different people connect with different things because I don't need somebody telling me to go out and do something. I need somebody to tell me to calm the fuck down. I don't need somebody to be like, go out and do the work you need to do. I need somebody to tell me to shut your brain off at weekends so that you can restore and recover and refresh. So I'm aware. So that's why I gravitate towards, you know, people like, you know, more Stoic philosophers, Seneca, Marcus Aurelius, because they're people who are very similar to me in terms of that go, 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 but they need to learn to calm their mind down. So the Gary V's of the world will work very well for people that are on the younger side of that same type A personality as me. I'm just not there, so I don't connect with that. But I do think it depends on the person. If you struggle to get up and go and struggle for motivation, then the last thing you need is to be fucking uber patient about what you're doing. I'm like, you need someone to fucking put a fire up your ass. Like, but if you're on the other side of that coin where you're really good at getting up and going, like, oh, and you fall into the bracket, you're similar to me. Like, you're like, right, got this ebook done, got this done, got that done. I'm like, yeah, fuck. I'm like, that's keep going because I connect with that because I'm similar to you. But your problem down the line will probably be similar to mine, that you won't struggle to get things done. You'll struggle to calm your mind down. So it's just following and finding that yin and yang based on your personality type. If you're someone that needs to fire up your ass just to get going in the morning, I'm like, well, you need to figure out and find people that can help you sustain that. You don't need a problem calming down because you're just uber calm by nature. Or if you're falling on the side similar to me and you own, or you and I, where we are driven, get up in the morning, Monday mode, get up and go, 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 go. But we struggle to calm down and we struggle to not compare and we struggle out of all these other things. It's just about having that self-awareness to identify where your issues and weaknesses are and then put plans in place around it. But I think to tie it all back to ultimate goals, regardless of who you are, you can't hit any goal. Like, you can't hit a target you can't see. Like, you just fucking can't. It doesn't matter who you are. So if you don't set the goal and know what it is you want, you know, one of my mentors used to always tell me, if you don't know what you want, you'll take whatever you get. And that's how life is, you know, relationships, business, fitness. Like, if you don't know what you want, you're just going to take whatever you get.
Brilliant. You absolutely hit the nail on the head there, because as you described, the person who was non-stop go, 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 anxiety because they have more to get done and looking for the next thing and struggling to switch off, I was just here nodding my head going, fuck, that's me in a nutshell. Which is I guess it's a good problem to have, but like, on a selfish level, that answer provided me personally with an awful lot of value and kind of made me go, oh yeah, geez, maybe I need to knock it down a gear every now and then. But brilliant. Thanks for that, Brian. It kind of brings me on to the next question, or I suppose topic, that you were speaking about goals in different areas. So something that's really helped me in, I suppose, structuring my lifestyle and my goals is your quadrant of the health, wealth, love and fulfillment. And for people who don't know what the quadrant is, you might give just a little bit of a breakdown. And then, is it possible to have goals simultaneously in each quadrant, or should the focus be on one area at a time?
That's another great question, because it when I came up with that quadrant, so the health, wealth, love and fulfillment quadrant is effectively a picture of quadrants, so four separate quadrants for everybody listening. Health is physical health, the way that I look, the way that I feel, my mental health, anxiety levels, stress levels, etc. Wealth is my bank account, so not worrying about paying bills, etc. Health, wealth, love is my personal relationships, my family, and then fulfillment is my job, so writing books, podcasts, the things that I get to do that I love. So I have those four quadrants, and it's funny because I have the original four quadrants in my bedroom in my mum and dad's house. So I came up with that off the, it was off the back of a couple of things, because it wasn't the four quadrants from the get-go. I had several silos and I had different names on them, and they were all personal to me, where I was just trying to get balance in my life. Because what can happen, and I created the four quadrants, and it's the first chapter. I literally opened the Rewire Your Mindset book with the four quadrants, and you know from the Rewire Your Mindset seminar, it's the thing that I open with, because it gives you context on where to shift focus in your life. And what happened to me, and again, similar, some people are similar to me, some people are falling on a different angle, but for me, I have a proclivity to go all in on things. And it's one of my superpowers that if I get a goal, I can become like a dog with a bone. And I'm just like, focus on the goal. But it normally comes at the expense of other things. And another quote one of my mentors told me, and it fucking hit a bit harder than it should have at the time, was when you're reaching for the moon, don't forget the flowers at your feet. And I remember I didn't understand it at the time. And then when I figured out what she meant, I'm like, oh man, that really fucking hurts. Where when you're striving for your goals, don't forget, when you're striving for the moon, i.e. your goals, don't forget the flowers at your feet. You know, your family, your friends, all the people who care about you and love you. Because that was happening to me, because I get very tunnel vision. And thankfully, I've had a super supportive network. Like, my mum is my biggest fan. My sister loves everything and has always helped at everything I could do. I've got a good circle of friends now. I didn't always, but I've always had a decent support network around me. And then my daughter was born, and that kind of it shifted a lot of my process, because she was born in 2015 and I was preparing at the time for the Worlds in Las Vegas, the Pro WBFF Pro Fitness Model Championships in Vegas, and I came 8th at that show. So I came top 10 in the world at that show. And I remember having this horrible feeling that I had gone so tunnel vision. My daughter was born a few months before, and I was literally out in Las Vegas. I had set a goal of, you know, coming top 10 in the world. I'm like, not bad for my the language at the time was, that's not a bad thing for, you know, a guy from Connemara in Galway going over to Vegas and coming top 10 in the world and as the top 10 fitness models in the world. And I remember being in my hotel room after the event. I had the medal around my neck, and I was sitting there going, I have nobody to share this with. I was like, what was the point of all of this? I was like, my family is at home. My mom and daughter, Collie was only a few months old at the time, were watching it on pay-per-view. And I'm like, I have nobody to share this with. I was like, I've done this, been so tunnel-visioned for 6 months on this end goal, and I have nobody to talk about with it. I was like, I felt so hollow. And that's when I came up with a philosophy that, you know, you're familiar with from the seminars, and it's in my first book, it's in my second book too, The Ladder Up Against the Right Wall. That, you know, the analogy I used when I was leaving teaching to go into fitness was, when I was teaching and working as a primary school teacher, I had my ladder up against the wrong wall. I was like, I was climbing it and I was climbing up this wall, but it was against the wrong one. But when I started back and moved back to Ireland in 2014 to start up my own personal training business, I'd been doing it for 2 years part-time in London, and I wanted to do it full-time. I was at the bottom of the ladder, but it was up against the right wall. And that's kind of how I felt when I was competing in fitness modeling and bodybuilding. I'm like, I'm climbing this ladder, but like, it's up against the wrong wall. I was like, I have nobody to share this with. I've literally sacrificed 6 months of my life, and now I have to go back and try and rebuild all these relationships, because I was saying no to dinner out with family. I was saying no to coffee with friends because I would have a double training session, or I would have to factor in my meals or have my meals, and I couldn't factor in the calories from, you know, going out to a restaurant. And the four quadrant formula came off the back of me being very aware and having the self-awareness that I tend to go all in on things. You know, I can do the same with business. I can get very, very addicted to things, which from the outside looks like a lot of external success. But internally, if you were to look into my mind, it's just a bunch of fucking monkeys going da 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 the whole time. And I didn't want my life to be like that anymore. I'm like, that's from being out of balance. I'm like, yeah, it's great to have this money in your bank account or this body and all these external things. That's all well and good. But at what expense? I'm like, if your family and friends, I'm like, one of the things I take the biggest pride in is talk to my family members and friends and hear what they have to say about me. I'm like, I take my biggest pride in that. I'm like, because none of it matters of the content I put out, the books I write, the speaking I do. None of that matters if my family think I'm a dick. Like, and I build my entire life on that philosophy. If I'm not spending time and quality time with my friends and family members and my daughter in particular, the number one person in my life, if I'm not doing that, what's the point doing all these other things? What's the point getting in the best shape ever and doing amazing in these shows? Or what's the point having X number in your bank account, you know, if you're not spending it on the people and experiences with the people that love you the most? And the four quadrant formula allows me to identify where I'm spending too much time. And what I do, and the tactic and the tool that I offer in the book, and that I offer, and again, I'm going to offer it on the podcast here now, you don't even have to read the book, is the health, wealth, love, and fulfillment. Like, break it into those four quadrants. Identify what that means for you. What does success look like for you? Because it's relative. You know, my wealth quadrant is very different now to what it was in 2014. Like, in 2014, I wanted to hit X number. Now it's just like, thankfully, I have a lot of problems in my life, but thankfully, money's not one of them because of a lot of good decisions I've made and learning from a lot of bad decisions. So that's not an area in my life I have to worry too much about. So I just keep that one ticking over by doing things I love, like talking and doing things that I would do for free. And then if I get paid for them, amazing, even better. So that changes, and your quadrants and your goals change. But identify what success looks like for you, because if you're looking to lose weight, your success metric in the health quadrant is going to be very different from someone trying to run an Ironman or do an Ironman triathlon. So what you have to do each week is going to be subjective to you. So identify what success means for you in each of the four quadrants, and then just come back to them and mark them 1 out of 10. That's literally what I did. The original one that I created back in 2015 is on my, like, in my bedroom, which is now one of Holly's toy rooms back at her granny's house, but it's on my bedroom. It's just the original one. It's like, you know, when you've written something years ago and it's all faded and it's there, like health, wealth, love and fulfillment, the original one, and the little subheadings underneath and what I need to do to hit them. And then every week when I created that first, I would just come back to it and go, right, what was my health like this week on a scale of 1 to 10? Right, it was a 7. Great. What was my wealth like? Right, I made good decisions. I hit my targets for what I was trying to hit this week. Right, that's an 8. You know, what was my love like this week? Do you know what? You didn't spend that much time with your family or your friends. That's a 6. Or for fulfillment, you know, I wrote 2 chapters of the book this week. That's a 9. So I could go back and look at it, what was happening every week and what was happening every month, and it was giving me direct feedback. It was like numbers on a scale. You know, if you're an overweight person trying to lose 100 pounds, the scale gives you feedback on whether you're going up or down, whether you're doing good or bad, you know, or whether you're getting closer or further from the goal. And having that 1 to 10 on those quadrants allowed me to go back and see where I was falling down. So all I could do, all I would do then is, right, my love quadrant was low this week. I can skip a training session. I don't need to do 6 sessions this week. I'll just do 5, and I'm going to go meet one of my best friends for lunch, and we're going to go and have a day together and just chill out. Like, or whatever it is that I had to do, whatever version of that I had to do. And then when I created in the book and the Rewire Your Mindset in that first chapter, it's just there. So there's a sample of it on what I do, and then a sample one to fill out. And it just keeps you accountable. It just gives you structure so that you don't get unbalanced. And in terms of whether you can do them all at once, it's not necessarily about doing them all at once. It's about realizing that life ebbs and flows, and there's going to be certain times when certain things are a higher priority. Like, you know, this own now is the best time because of the COVID, because of the world lockdown. Like, if you had a goal, so for example, I was training for Ironman triathlon. Like, so my health quadrant was taken, it was a lot of my time was taken up on, right, I need to be training because I was doing multiple hours, and then COVID came and then all the Ironmans are cancelled. So I'm like, all right, fuck it. There's no point putting all the energy into training now. I'm going to start writing my next book. I'm going to start doing the business course. I'm going to start getting these other things done that are a higher priority right now, because life ebbs and flows. And it's not about always being in a 9 or a 10 on every quadrant. It's about realizing that, right, I want to get in amazing shape now. One of the things I've put to my clients that are coming through my online programs now in quarantine is, you know, now is the best time ever to get in shape if you want to, because you have the time. I was like, you don't have the distractions that you once had. And if you want to double up your sessions, you can. You want to really focus on your nutrition and learn a few new recipes and try those out? You can, because you've got extra time. If you want to have an extra few hours in bed to improve your recovery, you can, because you have that extra time now. So if your priority is to get in amazing shape during lockdown, this is potentially the best time to do it. But realize coming back to those quadrants regularly is going to be key, because at certain times in life, certain things are going to be a higher priority. Like if you're living just above the breadline and your goal is to earn more money, you might have to take a hit on your training sessions. That's totally fine, because that's what you need to prioritize right now for the next few weeks, the next few months. And then in 6 months' time, you'll be steady and your bank account will be just ticking over and you'll be happy. And you can start shifting it back into your fitness and going to the gym more, etc. So in terms of balancing them, it's not necessarily about hitting 4 tens and getting a 10 in health, wealth, love and fulfillment. It's about realizing that some of them you're going to be better with and you're going to have higher scores. Some of them are going to be lower. And all you have to do is a slight adjustment to bring them up so that they're going to be steady based on the priority in your life at this moment in time. And all the quadrant does is bring awareness to it. My problem was I wasn't bringing awareness to it. I was really good with fitness because I love training, love working out. I'm pretty good with money, you know, on the wealth side, especially with the business, because of the nature of my business. I didn't struggle with that side when I set up my own business, but I wasn't great with the love side. I wasn't great with personal relationships, romantic relationships, even family relationships. Like, my daughter's taught me more about that than anybody, that you get what you put into these things. And my Achilles heel was always there. Thankfully, over the last 3-4 years, it's improved dramatically. But it wasn't. It was my Achilles heel 5 years ago because I just never brought any awareness to it. I just let it. It was what I call, and you might remember this from the seminar, life on autopilot. That's what was, it was, I didn't really bring any awareness to it. I didn't really think about it. It's just something that happened. Like an overweight person, normally their nutrition and their training's on autopilot. They're just not thinking about it. A broke person, normally their finances are on autopilot. Somebody that's unfulfilled in their relationships, normally that's the area of their life on autopilot. Somebody that's in a dead-end job that feels like a zombie Monday to Friday, their fulfillment level's on autopilot. All the four quadrants does is it brings awareness to what areas of your life are on autopilot, and then you can decide to change them if you want.
That's great, Brian. It's brilliant. And I think definitely from your seminar and just from staying in touch with you and contact, I've definitely been much more self-aware and built systems around self-awareness of, yeah, I'm not very good in this area. I'm quite strong in this area. So maybe I should put a little more of my resources and time and energy into the area where I'm not so strong. And like you said, with COVID-19 now, a lot of my energy is going into things that I can do during COVID-19 that I wouldn't normally have the time to do with normal life. So brilliant. It's all, I guess it's all a balancing act. I have one more question for you, Brian. I hope I'm not keeping you now because I know you're a busy man. But what do you do personally for mindset on a daily basis? And has there been a single process or routine or even an event such as the try or the Ironmans or the MDS or even a particular concept that has influenced your mindset? Or is it a combination of all your experiences and your routines? Does it all roll into one?
It's another great question because this answer has changed. If you would ask me this prior to COVID, the answer is different now. So I'm going to give you the answer what it would have been prior to COVID, and I'm going to tell you how it's changed slightly now. So I was a big believer in getting up early, running every day. They're kind of what I talk about in the book and what I talk about in my podcast is like anchors of self-discipline, that I by nature am a very disciplined person, that I have to have systems in my life that keep me disciplined. So one of the ways I do that is by getting up early. So generally prior to COVID, I always get up at 4 or 5 a.m. You know, I get up and I train early and I normally run every day because I hate running. It's something that I run ultra marathons and I do multi-day ultra marathon events, but I hate running. It's just not a training area that I like. I love weightlifting, CrossFit workouts, circuit training, strength and conditioning, but I hate to run. So I do that because conditioning yourself to do things that you don't want to do because you don't feel like it makes you mentally tougher. So prior to COVID, I would have been a big fan on doing that, and that would have been anchors in my day. But since COVID has came and obviously the lockdown and the gyms, etc., and I'm not training for anything in particular because I don't know when my races or events are going to be back on, I've been fortunate that even though I don't do those things now, I haven't set any alarm since COVID started. I've just been sleeping and letting my body get the rest it needs, and I haven't been running. I've just been doing a little bit of cycling and the home gym that I have in my house. And because of that, I have a little bit of what the analogy I would probably best describes it is when you have this overspilling from a cup. I have so much discipline and mental toughness built from having done that for so many years that even now when I take a step back, I don't necessarily lose it. And there was a fear there. You know, it's I've seen this with clients when they're trying to lose weight and they get to their goal weight and then they're afraid to increase their calories. And I'm like, that's not what's going to happen. You're not going to balloon back just because you increase your calories by 100 every week. And I had this misconception around my mental toughness and self-discipline that if I stop doing these things that I'm going to rebound back the other way. And it's not that I won't go back doing those. When the world goes back to normal, I'll go back doing those things. You know, it's staying on top of it. It's, you know, keeping the sword sharp. It's way easier to, you know, stay ready than to get ready. So I always have that philosophy. But now in COVID, it's kind of just doubled over, and it's been, I've been fortunate in the sense that I haven't had any drop off in that. I've been as productive as I am. My workouts have been good. I've been doing all these other focuses, you know, building up my TikTok, writing the book, recording podcasts, all these things that I can prioritize now and focus on. But what I do and what I advise is different. The reason I wanted to talk about what I did and what I do now is based on your individual starting point. Some people, their sword isn't sharp now. If your sword isn't sharp, the first job you need to do is to sharpen it. So doing things that can allow you to stay on top of your mental toughness, your discipline, etc., that's going to be goal number one. If your sword is already sharp because you were doing all of that prior to COVID, then you can back off now if you need to. So in terms of what I do, I would have been, and probably would have been a bit more preachy on this one if you had asked me prior to COVID, because it was serving me so much in the time. And I still believe that, like, keeping that sword sharp and staying on top of things is so much easier easier. You know, 0 to 1 is way harder than 1 to 10. Like, starting something is way more difficult than actually building momentum and going with it. But now having... I would be lying to you if I said that I was staying on top. I'm getting up at 4 a.m. every day and I'm running, because I'm not. I don't have a big enough why. I'm not training for an event. I don't need to get up early because I'm not traveling or commuting. So I have the extra time in the day. So I don't have a big enough motivating factor to do it. And I'm getting all the other things done as a result. So, and I'm hesitant to say that, because sometimes the advice is better to do what I did in the past to get this certain end goal compared to what I'm doing now. But because the world is on lockdown, it might be helpful to realize that all your hard work doesn't go just because you take a few steps back for a couple of months because of a pandemic, or, you know, the world shutting down or going on lockdown. So just being mindful of that as well. So I hope that helps, because I know that answer would have been very different 4 months ago.
Definitely. No, 100%. And how does the, I suppose, endurance events is very much fits in the mental toughness side of things. Do you find that any particular events or things like that have a profound effect on your mindset? Or do you think that they're just the icing on the cake to your routine?
No, for me, they gave me a lot. And this is probably a topic for another day, because I could talk about this for an hour. The endurance events for me, because endurance isn't necessarily my background, especially not running, and Marathon des Sables originally gave me a massive confidence boost, because I never ran a marathon prior to Marathon des Sables. I'd ran my first marathon to prepare for 6 back-to-back in the Sahara, and then I tore my Achilles when I went running through the Arctic, and I still finished that race. So I got different things from both of those events, two completely life-changing experiences on my side. Like, I've ran a 100-mile ultra marathon, I've done other things, but those two in particular gave me so much because of where I came from in the lead up to them, and not having the background in endurance, and then completing Marathon des Sables, and then completely trying to disconnect my body from my brain when I tore my Achilles in the Arctic to just keep fucking moving. That gave me a lot of mental strength to make me feel like I was resilient enough to handle anything that gets thrown at me. So I got different things, and I don't necessarily say that for that everyone should even consider running Marathon des Sables or running through the Arctic. Like, that's relative. Somebody else will get that from stepping foot into the gym, adding, you know, 20 kilos to their squat, or running a half marathon. People will get it from different things, but just be mindful that you have to push the limits sometimes, because, like, that's, you know, it's the old adage, you know, that the comfort zone is great, but nothing grows there. Like, I've heard it a million times. It's in every self-help book I've ever read, but it's true that you have to be pushing those limits regardless of what they are, because all the growth comes on the side of you pushing the bar from the other end.
Amazing. And yeah, I'm sure you could talk for hours on end on those events, and I would recommend anyone who's interested to actually check out your podcast. I'm not sure if you know the numbers of the podcast off by heart, but I know that the Arctic and the MDS podcast, both of them were really, really beneficial to me.
Yeah, 151 and 213, I think. And I'm not great with the numbers of my podcast, but I know those two just because the amount of downloads they have, I'm familiar with them.
Amazing. Yeah, I just thought I'd get you to share that, because if somebody wants to hear more on it, there's great value to be had. Well, listen, Brian, I could pick your brains all day long, but you're a busy man, and I'm sure you have plenty others willing to pick your brains. I want to, first of all, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. And second of all, just thank you for all your help. And I don't think I've said this, but you were the man who actually inspired me and gave me the courage to set up the podcast. So without you, we wouldn't be here. So thanks for that. And yeah, man, brilliant, brilliant value gained. So much, so much value in that episode in a short space of time. And thanks again.
My pleasure, Owen. Keep up the amazing work and just keep doing what you're doing, mate. You are smashing it.
Brilliant, Brian. See you soon. Listeners, thank you so much for tuning in, and I will catch you at the same time next week.